Thank you, Rabbi Wolfish, Bishut the Presidium, Chaverim. First of all, it just happened to work out this way, but in good professional form, I actually have a copy of the book with me. Unfortunately, it's published by, well, fortunately for academic terms, but for business purposes, it's published by Brill, so it costs 110 euro a copy, so it's a library book. I'd like just to add one piece to Rabbi Wolfish's introduction. I'm a proud member of the RCA since, I think, 1983. I was sponsored by my Rebbe in the rabbinate, the late, legendary, and unforgettable Rabbi Louis Bernstein, Zichron Livracha, who appointed me to the executive on my first trip around in the 80s, in his words, as a utility infielder. My job was that if he needed an extra finger at a vote, that I would make sure that I would be there, and otherwise I didn't have to come to the meetings. Since no good turn goes unpunished, then I got to be on the Rabbinic Kashrus Commission, which was another experience serving together with the legendary Manny Holzer. But that's perhaps my memoirs, not for now. My topic today, I hope won't sound too presumptuous. It is to examine the possibilities for the kind of orthodoxy upon which all of us grew up, and all of us, I assume, we're all sort of from the same, or most from the same pond, dreamed of, whether it was under the aegis and inspiration of Moreno Vareinu, Ahuv, the Rav, Zeichu Tzadik Livracha, or others, in terms of Israel. And because Yev Shalom Beis Medrash believed Torah, Chiddush I don't know, but Torah certainly, and because today is my father's 45th Yortzeit, I'd like to dedicate the remarks to his Lilu Nishmas, Adoni Avi Mori Varabi, Avram Yisrael, Bereg Yosef Reuven, and I have, of course, thanks to Rabbi Tradberg, as you're invited to pass out the source sheets. Let me start by defining terms and make a couple of preliminary observations. Number one, if we accept, and I do accept, the definition of the component parts of modern orthodoxy as set forth by Dr. Lim many years ago, they compose of basically four separate components. One, at the side of absolute unbending and sacrificial devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Torah, a commitment to Jewish peoplehood in its broad terms, openness, a critical, judicious openness to general culture, in the mode that, as Rabban Lichtenstein Zatzal used to love to quote Matthew Arnold, the best that has been said and spoken, a commitment to religious Zionism, and a commitment to the advancement of Jewish women within the context of orthodoxy to the degree and to the extent that in fact halacha legitimately, credibly, and with integrity allows. Now, when we look at this way that this vision played itself out in its two separate wings, one discovers an interesting fact. Number one, neither in the diaspora, here we'll talk about the states, or in Israel did the full vision of what we call modern orthodoxy play itself out the way that it was originally intended, whether it was as proposed by the Rav and his predecessors, or on this side of the pond by Rav Reina Zatzal and others, they didn't really grow in tandem. By the way, in terms of the use of modern orthodoxy, I'd like to share a comment, in fact, by Professor Tversky, Zichron Livracha, who was not well known for his being overly jocular, for those of you who remember him. We were pretty much scared of him, even more so than the Rav, in a totally different way. He once mentioned that the truth of the matter is that we make a mistake. We talk about modern orthodoxy. Modern orthodoxy is okay, the term. He said centrist orthodoxy It's a very bad formulation. He didn't explain to me why. He says, we should just call ourselves Orthodox and let everybody else figure out what they are. And that way, it's a much more integrated and stronger position to adopt. In any event, in the end, the American version of this vision did in fact engage and embrace Jewish peoplehood in its broad sense, did in fact engage culture in its broad and higher sense, Hochkultur, as we'd call it, and did embrace women. Religious Zionism, despite our best efforts and despite the testimony of all of us here, was not on the as strongly or successfully on the agenda. It's gotten longer or late, thank God, but certainly was not the burning issue in terms of our population, in terms of overall patterns, and the still relatively low degree of aliyah from North America and the rest of the diaspora, I think, indicates that fact. In Israel, it looks a little different. Jewish peoplehood, involvement in the broader community, being part, mamlachtiyut, if you wish, in part of the broader community, is certainly part of the religious Zionist outlook. Religious Zionism is utgesucht, and in fact, even the advance of women. Culture, on the other hand, never was, and has yet to become, or engagement with culture, ability to be culture, and has not been on the well on the agenda. In fact, when you look at the program that Rav Kook Zatzal, who also is your site, also today, lays out for Merkaz, you actually can't believe it. In a letter to Rav Yitzchak Kalevi, the author of the Doros HaRishonim, and he'll, you'll excuse me, I'm very impressed in how everybody here is very, very strict in terms of Havaras Sfaradit. I, on the other hand, am addicted to Ashkes Sfard, so therefore, when we come to quoting things, I'm probably going to fall back on Nagirsa Diyankasa, and I hope you'll forgive me. If you look at what was supposed to be studied, it wasn't just Gemara, it wasn't just Chumash. He wanted people to study secular and general philosophy. He wanted literature. He wanted history. He wanted, in fact, he even wrote a tshuva to Boris Schatz of the Bezalel, who for the founder of the Bezalel Institute, to integrate the arts. And I don't mean just the plastic arts. He has a tshuva in which he allows for the creation of three-dimensional art and sculpture. What he poskins for Schatz is that a Jew can sculpt whatever he wants. He should actually have the local janitor come to give the last little maka on the various statuary, so you don't get along wrong with a problem with the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. I mean, this is pretty quite amazing when you think about the fact that later then, Merkaz split over the question of whether you can have a school for teachers to train teachers to teach in the Mamlakti Dati and other schools as an attendant, as a, what's Reitz, to YU, what's it called? Affiliate. As an affiliate institution, that split the yeshiva, and that was one of the reasons why the famous break in the Dati Lumi world happened between Yeshivot HaKav of Rav Tau and his adherents, and that of Merkaz. And I should tell you, I mean, he was a Gadol B'Torah, but Rabbi Shapiro wasn't exactly a Rosh Hashiva, a YU Rosh Hashiva type either. So in terms of what his vision was about what Torah is about, the distances were not that great. So the truth of the matter is, so that this culture, this ability of cultural engagement never developed in Israel at all. It was never the idea that culture in its broad sense, literature in its broad sense, is an integral part of a person's education and necessary, was never emphasized. And more importantly, and I think more tragically, the educational system never developed in its students, whether male or female, the kind of tools which are necessary to critically encounter the outside world. But it's not just enough to read. One has to be able to engage. One has to be able to evaluate. And I've been teaching at Bar Ilan for, I'm starting my 23rd year now. My Aliyah anniversary is tomorrow. We have a lot of things together this week. One of the things I've discovered is the crisis that marks the encounter of literally hundreds of hundreds of graduates of the religious school system when they encounter anything which doesn't fit the very fixed Weltanschauung worldview of that they received in Ulpana or in Mechina or in Yeshiva Tichonit or even in Hesder, and it cuts both ways. In other words, it's not a matter of, it becomes either rejectionism or surrender. Either I do something which is totally, parav, I become a mathematician or something like that, and some of my best friends literally are mathematicians, which does not require any kind of engagement with, the humanities or the social sciences. Or one gives in, or one says, well, you know, what they taught us was crazy, and that's not true, and at best we will become what has now become known on the east side of Manhattan, social orthodox. I will go about my business, and I will either the life of an ostensibly religious Jew or not, but in terms of my involvement or acceptance of the fundamentals of Jewish tradition, there I will accept everything that the lords of academia say, because they are obviously more sophisticated than we are. The idea that Jewish tradition has different levels of understanding, the idea that a sophisticated approach to things like Agadata and to Parshanim, that in fact one can engage the outside world and still assume the autonomy and integrity of Jewish tradition, is not instilled in the students, and we pay a tremendous, tremendous price for that. I'll say in passing, by the way, I consistently discover something of a binary or zero sum game attitude towards Yiddishkeit as well. I really wish I had statistics, but I cannot tell you how many times I have been told by a female student who's told me she's no longer religious. Why is she no longer religious? I said, you keep kosher? Yes. Keep Shabbos? Yes. Do you fast on the Tanesim? Yes. Which is better I can say for a lot of, we all know what the Lithuanian yeshiva tradition was with regard to not Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. Yes. Do you bench lift? Of course. So what makes you not religious? I wear pants. Now I'm not here arguing yes or no about women's pants. It seems to me, however, that says something in terms of one's attitude and an all or nothing attitude towards what constitutes involvement in a religious lifestyle. So there's a lack of complexity, lack of nuance on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have not learned to cultivate intellectual humility vis-a-vis the academic world. Now I know this is going to sound strange coming from academic, but I grew up in an academic environment where we were very much aware of the fact that, number one, that if anything, the scientific method should teach you on humility and not arrogance. Because the scientific method is predicated upon what? That you know what you know up until this very moment. Because at the very moment that you're writing your world's life's work, there could be a guy in Australia who is absolutely destroying your entire theory because he found something to overturn it. So if anything, academics should be the humblest of human beings. In addition, according to Karl Popper, who is today still considered to be the philosopher of scientific knowledge, nothing can be considered scientific unless it can be disproved. By definition, therefore, emunah is not scientific, which is an issue you can take up with the Rambam. That's another question. What ends up happening, however, we find that intellectual humility, saying I'm willing to give tradition perhaps the benefit of the doubt, is a point that which has also not been cultivated. By the way, as from what I can tell, from my various sojourns in the States. It's an issue with us as well. I don't know if you're aware, but the question of whether of the historicity of Chumash and the historicity of Tanakh is what is at least based on social media, which may not be representative. Is a question which whether that can be acceptable within the Orthodox context is in fact one of the burning questions that's going on today, at least in terms of intellectual circles in ostensibly Orthodoxy. I personally think that you can't deny the historicity of Chumash and Tanakh and still call yourself Orthodox. There was a gentleman who lived around the corner from here for many years, lived to be 101. He was Shomer Shabbos his entire life, and he maintained, in fact, that position. He's Mordechai Kaplan, and we all recognize the name and his career, and I think that's enough on that point. We have a situation in Israel which is very, very problematic, especially because it's not possible today, under any circumstances, this is true even more so of the Haredi world, it is not possible to hide from information, because information comes at you no matter what. If you don't have the tools to be able to critically engage that information and not to believe everything that you read, as convincing as it might be, if it contradicts the Torah and if the Torah and it goes beyond the Torah's ability to be able to accommodate it, then we have a serious problem. In the days of the Chasam Sofer, it was possible. You could have your own Jewish newspaper, you could live in the ghetto, but when the internet comes into your house, no matter what, and even with internet Rimon and whatever filters you have, this type of material does not get filtered, the intellectual question and the religious question and the Emuna question becomes, all three questions become serious issues and serious challenges, and I believe actually can eat away at the core of Jewish religiosity. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, there is another price that we are paying for the fact that we have not learned how to engage the outside world. And that actually is due to a very happy circumstance. When I made Aliyah in 1993, Judaism in Israel was at a low edge, as a low ebb. We landed, little did we know, we landed 3 days before Prime Minister Rabin, Zichrono Livracha, received his first letter from Yasser Arafat, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, recognizing the State of Israel, and so we got to land in the middle of Oslo. What many people forget is that Oslo was not just a political thing, it was a Kulturkampf. It was a cultural war in which the secular anti-Jewish, post-Zionist, anti-religious leading elements of Israeli society, whether it's academia, whether it was in the media, whether it was politics, made war against the Torah. I can't say it any more strongly. They made war against the Torah. If you remember if you were here at the time, in the 1996 election, when Netanyahu ran against Peres, the left-wing, propaganda, election commercials were viscerally anti-Semitic. They were, and I don't use this kind of language lightly, they were literally right out of their shtum. In fact, I at the time I lived on Jabotinsky 36. My downstairs neighbor was Run Rav Avadi Yosef, which was an interesting experience by itself. In any event, I was standing at the bus stop. At that time it was the 15th, now it's the 13th. I was picked up by a dear friend of mine, Professor Shaya Gaffney of Hebrew University. And he gave me a ride to where we were going. So we're talking, he asked me how my Aliyah was going. It actually was going very well, because what happened was when we landed, not only did Oslo start, but all the universities went on strike. So that whereas other people had to go to work, I had like 9 months to be able to get used to making Aliyah and helping my family with their klita. We didn't go back to work till March, and in typical fashion, they paid us a whole salary anyways that's having a little bit of socialist paradise. In any event, and so he said to me, you know, I feel bad for you. I said, why do you feel bad for me? He said, I feel badly for you because I lived here when it was a Jewish country, and now it's not a Jewish country anymore. That was 1993. As it happened, over the course of the following 20 years, for all kinds of reasons, which now is not the time to go into, a miracle happened. It's nothing less than a miracle. The state of Israel has become a Jewish country with such profundity that if you told me 22 years ago that this was going to happen, I would tell you you're crazy. It started before Rabin's assassination and kept going. Just to give you a sense, if you go to the Israel Democracy Institute, also around the corner, and look up their Gutman studies, which are sponsored by Avichai, over the course of the 90s, early 90s, late 90s, and the last one, which is 2009, one discovers, one finds that this is played out, this is borne out. But let me just give you some figures. 80% of the Jews in the state of Israel believe in God. Think about that for a minute. In the Pew study, 20% of the Jews of the United States believed in God. Okay. Another one. Whatever the case might be. The Torah and its precepts are God-given, 65%. Okay? Now, in addition, 97% circumcised children, 93% celebrate a Pesach Seder. There are over 1,000 informal Torah and Jewish studies groups throughout the country that meet on a regular basis, initiated by people, and they're looking for teachers. Over 1,000. Okay? The Piyut phenomenon. I don't know if you're familiar with it. There is a website called piyut.org.il, one of the more blessed, Avichai has done amazing things. This is one of the more amazing things. People get together, chilonim and datiyim, and they get together to record and to sing together piyutim of their ancestors at the time of the chagim. There's going to be one soon at Beit Avichai as part of this effort. I asked a couple of chiloni friends of mine. Chiloni doesn't mean chiloni. Okay, by the way, let's forget that. Aside from the people from Aretz, they're not aware of this. That in fact, the proper terms are as follows. There are 15%, approximately 10 to 15% of the Jewish population in the state of Israel, hardcore atheists. You know, leftists. Just like my grandfather, who was a communist, probably because his father was a Rav. I don't know, whatever. But, alright, that's 10%. The other 85 to 90 are somewhere in a spectrum of traditional, because they are words of the word they use today, theists. The degree of kashrus observance is over 75% of some sort. The degree of Shabbos observance is over 65%. The percentage of people who fast on Yom Kippur is over 73% last year. Now if we detract the 10% who are atheists, or 15%, and then you take consideration those people who can't fast because they're not well, you end up with 100% of the traditional community. And so on, and so on, and so on. So that the number of people who want is growing by leaps and bounds because they care. The Jews of the state of Israel want to be Jewish, not just Israeli. They want a kesher with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. They want mitzvahs in their lives. I'm going to say something harsh. I mean, I guess you can say a certain amount of. All right, you know, the Rav Zatzal used to say that. The Rav Zatzal used to tell the story that Reb Chaim went to give his first tshuva drasha. I'm sure Rabbi Wolfish has heard the story a thousand times. His first Shabbat Shuvah last year in Drasha in Brisk, he said something like, "Dogeid Reiden Chaim mit Chaimin. Chaim is going to Chaim. You can listen to him." So I'm not. So this is this way. But I will tell you that I hear from all my non-Orthodox students that in fact, if anything keeps them from that, ani machaber et yahadut v'sone et hadat. Explain that to me. Alright? Apropos of the earlier discussion, you can take that where you wish. Okay? The anecdotal evidence is everywhere. Okay? So what's this got to do with modern orthodoxy? People want to know. People want to learn. Most of the Jewish community was not raised on Torah and mitzvahs and doesn't understand what things mean. Okay. Which leads us to our study. Please take the sources out. In a manner in which I learned from Professor Tversky. Professor Tversky was a great aficionado of a method of historical method called the history of ideas. The idea being that there are certain central ideas which maintain their integrity, but they go through different nuances of understanding. The fancy word is topos. If you'd like to sort of amaze your friends at the next cocktail hour, although the wine festival is going on now also, that's another place you could throw around words like this. I would like to zero in on a few verses from Parshas Veschanan. The Torah says as follows: Dvarim Dalet Heilches. Re'ei Limadati Eschem Chukim Mishpatim Kasher Tzivani Hashem Elokai Lasos Kein Bekerav Haaretz Asher Atem Ba'im Shama Lerishta. Ushmartem Vasisem Ki Hi Chochmaschem Uvinaschem Leinei Ha'amim Asher Yishmuun Es Kol Achukim Eile Ba'amru Rak Am Chacham V'Navon Hagoy Hagadol Hazeh. Ki mi goy gadol asher lo elokim krovim elav, kashem elokeinu b'chol koreinu elav. Umi goy gadol asher lo chukim mishpatim tzadikim kechol haTorah zos asher anochi nosein lefnechem ayom. At the moment, the operative pasuk is the second one. Ki hi chochmaschem uvinaschem leinei ha'amim. Why? Because asher yishmu es kol achukim ha'ele v'amru rak am chacham v'navon hagoy hagadol hazeh. What does that mean? So Rashi, interestingly, the Gemara says, what's the Gemara? But it's the Bavli over here on Shabbos Ayin Hey Amud Aleph says, Amar Rabbi Shimon Ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Mishum Bar Pekapora, Kol Yodeh Lachashe Betkufos Umazolos Veino Choshe Valov Akos of Omer Vespolar Hashem Lo Yabitu Umase Yaladav LaRa'u. If you don't know how to do astronomy, then you basically are an ingrate to God, if not a spiritual cretin. Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Nachmani, Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin shem mitzvah ala adam lechashev tkufos umazolos. It's a mitzvah to know how to calculate the calendar. Shenemar, I wonder how many of us, in fact, understand even the first page. I mean, I don't. The first page of the luach with the Rabbanut gave up, Rabbi Bezin Zechon Lebracha. When I was a young Rav, I wasn't the JSS, I went straight from Ray from Boston into the Rav Shir. But he found out that I was a young Rav, and on Friday mornings after before SR, which, you know, when we went, didn't go, whatever. Alright, I used to try to come sometimes. Anyways, he would come in, and he would sit down with me, and he would give me ideas, like what the drasha should be for Shabbos. And then he'd check me, then Sunday afternoon, when I would come for Kol Seders, he would check me out and say, so what'd you say? So he once told me that when he was the Rav in Beis Medrash HaGadol in Washington Heights, there was a gabbai there. He said two things he remembered from that experience. One, Reb Meisha Soloveitchik was his Rav, was his balabas, and Reb Meisha, who was his Rebbe, used to put his arm on his shoulders and say, this is my rabbi. And the other thing was he had to deal with the deal with gabbai was, he told the gabbai, if you ever ask me what's in the luach, I'll throw you out of the shul. And if you ever paskin the toes and say for Torah, I'll also throw you out of the shul. That's Rabbi Bezdin, you know, the twinkle in his eye is what he said. Since it's a mitzvah, so how many of us understand that, how to do it? But since it's a mitzvah, know how to know that much astronomy. Shenema, Ushmartim, Vasisem. Okay. Why does the Gemara say this? Because astronomy is a science. Astronomy is something which everybody can understand. Just like mathematics is an international language, so is astronomy. And the Jewish capacity at astronomy was able to amaze the Gentiles. In fact, one of the more interesting things, the Rambam, you know, in throughout the Mishneh Torah, he scatters literally dozens, if not hundreds, of philosophical observations, and most of them the Rebbe doesn't comment on. When he gets to Kiddush HaChodesh, the Rebbe says, oh, I know about this stuff. And he jumps in and he criticizes the way the Rambam calculates the calendar, because he says, this is part of my education. I know astronomy. Okay. Rashi picks up, doesn't quote this Gemara, but he picks up this general thread. And he says, Kihi chokhmaschem uvinaschem bezos techashvu chachamim unavonim leinei ha'amim, because that's something that other people can wrap their heads around. Okay. Now the question is, what does that mean? That means that there is on some level, the Torah can even be appreciated by not just by Jews, but by non-Jews as well. What parts of the Torah? So here we have an interesting difference of opinion among various authorities. In the 12th century, the first Jewish Aristotelian was named Avraham ben David, who's known as the Ravid HaRishon. There were three Ravids, those of you who know, I'm sure we all know. There was the Ravid HaRishon, Avraham ibn Dawood, who was both a historian, wrote a book called Sefer HaKabbalah. It's got nothing to do with Kabbalah, it has nothing to do with Kabbalah, certainly. It's a history book of the history of Torah Shebaal Peh, including all the way down to middle 12th century Spain. He doesn't know much about what's going on above the Pyrenees. He has one statement at the end of the last chapter, and he says, yeah, I hear there's some Rebbe Yaakov up in Storten in France somewhere, and he gets a big Yoshikoyach. I hear he's a big Talmud Chacham. Who's Rebbe Yaakov? Rebbe Natan. Yeah, he's going to be when Tom was transforming Torah, he hears, and he heard that episode with something going on in Ramaru. In any event, and the other book he wrote was called Emunah Rama, which is the first attempt to sort of merge or sort of have Judaism encounter Aristotelianism. And he quotes in our context in the introduction, he says as follows. He discusses people who are confused by science and philosophy. He prefigures the Rambam here. V'hu navoch al mashe mitzara kabbalah, means by tradition, levad hagiyehu, v'lo igiyah malato at shiatamet lo mashe nishtabesh. But the guy has questions, he knows what tradition tells him, but he can't wrap his head around it in terms of his intellectual, in terms of his logic and his reason. A little commercial for myself. This book is going to help him. Kikvar hikravnu lo. That doesn't mean sacrifice. Kikravnu means to make something reasonable. When the Rambam says something is karov, it means it's reasonable. When it's rachok, it says it makes no sense. So the Rambam, what he says, and the Rambam says in the introduction to Moravid Mishnah Torah, he says, I'm going to bring the dinim, krovim, I'm going to make them accessible, reasonable, understandable. And so on and so forth. V'akel yitbarech v'yitaleh omer b'toratol ha'chachama u'shmartem v'asisem ki hi chochmaschem v'yunaschem leinei ha'amim asher yishmun as kol ha'chukim ha'ele v'amru rak am navoch v'navon ha'goy ha'gadol hazeh v'lo amar zeh ala mitzvos ha'shimios. Here he adopts Rav Sagan's distinction between chukim, which you have to accept blindly, and mishpatim, which are rationally understandable. Goyim are not going to become amazed at the wisdom of the chukim because they're expressions of God's will, and we accept it. We accept it because that's Kabbalah. That's Kabbalah. So Malchus Shamayim. There is no interfaith. Apropos confrontation. Can be no interfaith dialogue on the question of chukim. Because it's just like I can't understand why when the priest picks up the cracker and says this is my body that it, something should happen. Same thing over here. He says, and it doesn't refer either to political issues either. So he says the Mishpatim know and the Chukim know what's going to amaze the Goyim is our theology. Okay. Theology. In other words, philosophy is an international language. There they will understand amazed at our religion. Ibn Ezra took issue with everybody. It's one of the reasons why Ibn Ezra, if you know, Ibn Ezra could do many things. One thing he could never do is make a living. Like Dickens, he made his living by wandering from place to place and writing for patrons. He got paid by the word. That's why there were three perushim on Shmos and two on Brachos and this and that. Because, you know, I mean, look, you can't fax it from place to place. If you write one version of a perush and you send it, sell it to a guy in Toledo, and then you vulgar zich to Narbonne, and then he ended up in France also, who's gonna know? So you make a little change here, a little change, and you recycle. But in any event, Ibn Ezra, and one of the reasons he had to go from place to place was because he was something of a cantankerous. Somebody of a cantankerous individual. Although one of the more interesting moments, I think, in Jewish history is, so it is said. You know, the Rashbam in Pshuto Shel Mikra, interprets the pasuk Vayerev Vayivoker Yom Echad as, and there was evening, and there was morning, and when the morning came, the first day came. In other words, against the Kabbalah of Torah Shebal Peh. And it's meant only as a Pshuto Shel Mikra, Chas V'Chalila, the Rashbam is not denying Chazal. But the one who took up the task on it was Ibn Ezra, which is kind of funny because the Rashbam was a profoundly pious individual. I mean, he was a real, he was very frum. I mean, but really frum. Rabbi Natan was more of a Litvak, but the Rashbam was, the Mordechai tells a story at the end of Erevin, at the Hagos Erevin, that Rabbi Natan and, Rabbeinu Tam was going on a trip with his brother Rabbeinu Tam, and they got to the Balagola, and Rashbam would always walk around with his feet, with his eyes on the ground, because he didn't want to see a woman. He was afraid he'd see a woman. So he gets on the wagon, he's waiting for his little brother Yankel to come. And, he didn't notice, and so then his Rabbeinu Tam shows up, and he says, you know, Alti Tzadik Harbe, Sa Einecha Lemala, V'tireh Sus V'pere, Ditzavim Lefanecha. If you looked ahead, this Balagola is being driven by a donkey and a sus, and you're not, and it's like a shor v'chamor. You're not allowed to be on the thing. So in other words, if you weren't such a, you know, if you look up and see where we're going, your extra chumra is leading to an Issur D'oraisa. So that's why I think it was the original Litvak, not the Rashbam. In any event, here Ibn Ezra, who everybody's screaming, you know, oh, we can't teach Ibn Ezra because it's problematic, he was the defender of the faith against the Rashbam. So it's in Hebrew we call it Afuch al Afuch. In any event, in Yisod Morah, which is a book which did have apparently had a serious impact on the Rambam, he writes about this our pasuk, Mi Goy Rak Am Chachon Ben Avon, and he says, when Ein Lehem Tamim, he says there must be reasons for the mitzvahs. It can refer to the theology. It refers to the mitzvahs. And it refers not just to mishpatim, but to chukim. And if we don't think that they're tzadikim, and the word tzedek, what does the word tzedek mean? No? Help me. What does tzedek mean? Equitable and rational. Because the definition of rationality in Greek philosophy is even. Okay? What does justice hold in her hands?
Balance.
A scale balance. A balance. Everyone's a Colombian knows that. But in any event, so he says it has to be reasonable. Here I recommend you read the sixth chapter of Sotwersky's book, The Introduction to the Code of Maimonides. He lays this out at length. So it must be the mitzvahs are communicable. But you know what that means? That means that the Torah must be able to be communicated and command the respect and hopefully the assent of the outside world in language that the person who's not only not observant but not Jewish can respect and understand. Not that every town that is going to play out every single nuance and play out in Hebrew say lematzuf the entire we've all noticed that we become illiterate in two languages once you live here long enough, right? Reason's not going to perhaps explore every single element of the Torah, but at least it can be communicated. The Rambam, against this background, was extremely distressed, not just about the need to be able to explain Tamei HaMitzvos in terms that can command in Jeffersonian mode the assent, if not the consent, of everyone. He was most concerned when it came to interpreting other parts of the Torah, especially Medrashei Chazal. in a very, very famous passage, which has not had the kind of cachet and currency that it deserves, in the introduction to Perek Chelik, the Rambam talks about the three different attitudes towards Medrashei Chazal. It's also, by the way, one of the points of contention between the so-called Yeshivot HaKav and the Yeshivot who are the daughter yeshivas of Har Etzion. He writes about people, he says there are three attitudes toward the things that Chazal say. This one group, he says, and it's the bottom of the page, Hakata Rishonim Rova Shinif Gashti Mahem Vashera Iti Chibureyam Vasher Shamati Aleim, Mevinim Otam, Mevinim means explain them, Kipshotam Veinam Masbirim Otam Klal. They take them literally and they don't, Masbirim meaning they do not give them any intellectual content. So it comes from Svara, not from explaining. All the impossible things become absolutely necessary. Because they haven't got a regular general education. And they lack the intellectual achievement or sophistication. They don't realize what they're doing themselves. And nobody who will, in fact, point that out to them. Let's skip a little to the next page. I can turn the page, I guess, to the bold part. Vakat hazo hamiskena rachmanut al sichlutam, arachmanis. Lepi shehem romem muet chachamim lepi machshavtam, veinam ela mashpilim utam betachlit ha-shiflut, veinam margishim bekach. V'chei Hashem, ki akat hazo ma'abdim hadar ha-Torah u'machshichim zohara. V'osro mesim Torah Hashem behepech ha-mechuvan ba. L'pi sh'Hashem amar ha-chochmat Torah Torah shishmo'un et kol ha-chukim ha-ele. V'akat hazo dorshim b'vishtei divrei chachamim dvarim asher im yishmo'um ha-amim yomru rak am sachal v'naval ha-goy ha-katan hazeh. והרבה שעושים כמדרשנים המבינים לעם מה שאינם מבינים הם בעצמם ומי ייתן ושתקו כיוון שאינם מבינים מי ייתן אחרי שתחרישון ותהי להם לחוכמה. If you think that this doesn't exist, take a look at some of the pirate radio stations known as the Arutzei HaKodesh. So that's group one. Group two is even more interesting. Vakat HaShnia Gamhem Rabin, there are also a lot of these. Vehemotam Shera Udivrechachamim Usham Uhu Vehevinuhu Kipshuto. They also take things literally, but they're Yani sophisticates. Vikhashvu Shain Kavanat Chachamim Bakach Ella Mashmut Pishteyadvarim. They also take things literally. Velachem Zilzilubo. So they make fun Echman Litzlan of Chazal. Ubiginuhu. And they mock Chazal. V'chashvu lemuzar mashayno muzar. They thought odd what in fact is not odd. V'yal igu al divrei chachamim li'itim krovot. They make frequent fun of Chazal. V'choshvim shehem yoter nevonim mehem. They think they're much wiser than Chazal. V'yoter zachei ha-rayon. And they think in a straighter manner. V'shehem aleim ha-shalom p'tayim. If the Rambam hadn't said it, I'd be afraid to say it. He says, and they think Chazal are fools, chasrei dat, idiots, salim, fools, b'chol amtziut, they don't know anything. Vayinam masigim shum davar klal. They didn't understand anything. We're the big sophisticates, we're the big knockers. V'rov mishanafal b'machshava zo, most of the people who fall into this trap, otam hatoanim shehem rofim, the guys who claim that they're doctors. By the way, you mean doctors. I mean, I come down on doctors. Medicine in the Middle Ages is applied philosophy. Okay. If you want to be a doctor, you did a BA and MA in philosophy, and if you want to make a living, so you took what Aristotle had to say and you applied it on a person. Because all scholarship was all knowledge was considered to be integrated and part of one thing. In fact, the idea was translated later into Hebrew in the 15th century in the Renaissance. Rabbis like Yudames Leon and others called themselves Chachamim Kolulim, all inclusive Chachamim, which is simply a Hebrew translation of the Italian uomo universale, that you know everything. So these are the pseudo doctors. Vachozim b'mishpatei ha-mazalot, in the astrologers. Lepi shehem lepi dimyonam pikchim chachamim philosophim. They think that they're big intellectuals. V'kama rechokim hen min ha-enoshut etzel ha-philosophim ha-amitim. How the real philosophers are Chazal. They were stupider, they're more foolish than the first group, and they're more silly. So these are the sophisticates, the pseudo-sophisticates, who dismiss Chazal. Well, what? They know Akkadian, they didn't know archaeology, they didn't know this, they didn't know. We know better than the last 3,000 years of whatever. What?
That's true.
But it's more striking that he puts it here, because the Morne Buchim was meant lecha v'la domim lecha. This was for everybody, and there were no restrictions. By the way, I would mention, going back to 1995, this is one of the reasons why our community gets it bad from both sides. Because there is an unholy alliance, I used to say, between Meretz and Aguda. Between the atheist, secularist left, and the most fundamentalist of our Haredi brethren, because they need each other. They desperately need each other. Because those who would adopt a Chassam Sofer position would say, oh, see, that's the only alternative. And the sophisticates in their own eyes say, see, this is what you want to get involved with. The idea there could be something in the middle, which in fact partakes of both worlds and the best of both worlds, this is a challenge to both. That's one of the reasons why, we don't appear usually on the radar. Coming back to my point, you have a huge population of Jews in Israel who want to know. And we don't have the teachers, the rabbonim, the intellectuals who can translate the Torah to a westernized society. I mean, this sounds like stuff the Rogue was saying in the 1950s. So, you know, sometimes we're behind. The Smurfs came to Israel 10 years after they were dead in the United States. So the Havdol, something similar happens here. We lack the people to be able to negotiate, to translate, and to be able to convey in terms that command, again, the assent, hopefully here, the consent of our Jewish brethren in Israel to see the depth, the sophistication of Torah, and not to have to buy necessarily whatever looks or whatever contemporary fashion in the inferior and superficial world of internet memes and slogans presented as truth. So, where does that leave us? Where I think that leaves us is the challenge that I think we were made for. Despite what I said before, we are in a situation in which the number of products of our world, the modern Orthodox world, that have come to Israel is greater than it's ever been before. Every so often, I hear about more and more younger rabbis. I'm already 60, so I'm not so young. But younger rabbanim who are giving up their careers in the States and coming here to teach. They have the tools. We have now the troops. It's our obligation, and I would love to see the RCA region here to take that under their wing, to encourage our younger colleagues who are now here, not just to treat, they have to fix their Hebrew a little bit, no problem, but not just to pastor and to treat our fellow Anglo Olim, but to be able to provide the tradition that was embodied first by the Rav, and then by Rav Aaron and others, and to translate that into Hebrew, into Israeli terms, to provide the mixture of tools, information, and intellectual humility vis-a-vis without surrendering to the outside world, to the searchers, both on the inside and on the outside. We can transform and strengthen the Jews of this country, the Yiddishkeit of this country, and imagine if we can do that, we could possibly by our efforts see something really quite remarkable. I don't remember from whom I heard this, but the Machlokas Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Yeshua, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about Benissa Nigelu, Benissa Sidon Li Goyel,
or in this anigalu or betishri asin leigoyel, what's enough? What's the machlekes? What's the nafkamina? Nafkamina is pashut. It's like beito achishena. We can merit the geula because if God doesn't get us out of the pit, I mean, forget it. Or we can do it on, or we can merit it on our own efforts. Nisan is God having to take us out of the tapuach, tachat tapuach ha'aratich, not through any chusim or ours. And Tishrei is that we merit it, achishena, because we brought more and more people to Kadosh Baruch Hu and to Torah. That's, I think, the challenge of our population in this country. I hope it will be something that the RCA in New York will listen to and do here. Maybe even we can convince other affiliate institutions, which will remain nameless, to participate. And then we could actually say, Thank you very much.